welcome everyone to a very important discussion about the unprecedented number of bills that have been proposed, passed, and signed into law across the United States to restrict the rights of a tiny minority of our population. In the name of protecting a well-protected majority, these bills target transgender people, mostly children and the adults who care for them. Before introducing our guests, I'd like to start reading this from the ACLU. These anti-trans bills target transgender and non-binary people for discrimination, such as barring or criminalizing health care for transgender youth, barring access to the use of appropriate facilities like restrooms, restricting transgender students' ability to fully participate in school and sports, allowing religiously motivated discrimination against trans people, or making it more difficult for trans people to get identification documents with their name and gender. And here, I'm not going to read this whole thing because it would take up much of our hour. Here's a list of some of the bills that have been proposed and passed in a number of states prohibiting health care for transgender youth. Alabama passed, Arkansas passed, signed into law, Arizona in committee, Florida read onto the floor, Georgia, Iowa, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, this one luckily has died in committee, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, which has passed the House committee and is placed on the calendar for a vote, Utah, luckily that one died, and West Virginia, which is in committee. The single-sex facility restrictions bills are currently in the process in Arkansas and passed in Tennessee. Excluding transgender youth from athletics, this list is too long for me to read in any decent amount of time. And identity restrictions on identification documents, Montana is still considering it. South Dakota died in committee. There are other anti-trans bills in a number of other states. And then there's a whole list of religious exemption bills that have to do with LGBTQ people, with adoption and foster care, religious exemptions in schools and student organizations, and other religious exemption bills. So, keep in mind that the largest estimation of percentage of the human population that is transgender is 0.6%. This many laws governing the activities of so few and so vulnerable people. I hope that in this conversation we'll be able to explore who these people are, why they are the way they are, what they need, and perhaps why they appear so threatening now all of a sudden in so many states. I am Suki Wessling, a host of Talk of the Bay, and I am honored that I am joined today by a panel of people who reside on various sides of this issue. I say that, and then I think, wait, that sounds like they might agree with it. No, what I mean is that the three people joining me today are intimate with this issue from different sides of how it expresses itself in our community. Andrea Damon is a volunteer and advocate with Trans Families of Santa Cruz County, a parent support organization dedicated to making the world a better, safer place for trans and gender diverse children. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you.
Max is a young adult from Santa Cruz who transitioned as a teen. Welcome, Max.
Thank you.
And Dr. Jenny Schreck is a Santa Cruz family physician that specializes in transgender care. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to have a wide-ranging conversation here, and I hope that you listeners will get a lot of food for thought here, have a lot of your questions answered. And I really want to start with the basics, and you know, the really basic question is, what are transgender people? And Jenny, maybe you can start us off a little bit by giving us maybe a more medical definition of transgender people.
So
Well, a transgender person is someone who identifies or expresses themselves as a different gender than what they are born as or what their biological sex is. So, for example, if someone is born and I guess labeled is, I'm not sure that's the right word, but told that they're a female at birth, but later on they identify as a male or express themselves as male, they would consider themselves a transgender male or a transgender boy. So it's basically your gender identity is different from your biological sex or assigned sex at birth.
And is there any understanding in the scientific community about why this is?
That's a great question. There's no clear genetic marker for, someone being transgender. I think there's a lot of factors. We don't see clear like twin correlations that, say one twin is transgender, that the other twin's more likely to be transgender as well. I don't think there's a clear correlation there. So, we don't really know. Embryologically, the anatomy of a fetus starts out the same, whether you are, XX chromosome or XY chromosome. So, there's a multitude of things that could change not only the anatomy, but maybe expression and brain development, both in the fetus, whether that be hormones, we really don't know. So whether that changes, during the development of the fetus, or, are there some factors that are happening later? There's no clear, scientific explanation for this. So we just don't have that information.
Okay. Max, did you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, so I know you were saying that there isn't really any scientific proof about the twins being trans. Anecdotally, I know two sets of identical twins who both came out as trans at different times. And I do wonder if perhaps that's just not having a huge research, like a huge population to be able to form a research group on.
Yeah, we certainly don't, when we're talking about such a small group of people, one of the problems is the amount of data that we have available to us. And I know that there's research having to do with hormone levels in the mother's body affecting fetuses, and that's certainly true. And I want to add a definition for any listeners who are not clear on this, that there's also people who are called intersex, and they are different in that they have one of a surprisingly large number of different syndromes that make their biological sex not 100% male or female for a variety of reasons. We're not going to go into that because that's not what we're talking about today, but I just wanted to add that as another piece of information so that what we're talking about are people who at birth were identified as one sex or another, but as they're growing up, they identify their gender being different than their assigned sex at birth. So Max, could you talk a little bit about your experiences? How do you remember how you first knew that you were transgender?
Well, yes, I always had a sense that my gender was a little funky. I don't think I had the words to describe it for a very long time. When I was a young kid, I was assigned female at birth, and I was raised up until I was about 14 that way. And when I was in early elementary school, I used to describe myself as a tomboy, which did not actually fit given the connotations of that word. And so I had a lot of confusion from people, like, why are you describing yourself as a tomboy? That doesn't really make sense. And I got very offended about that. But moving forward, I started to see more trans people and genderqueer people, and I started to have more of an awareness that that was a thing. And I came out pretty soon after that.
And what was your experience with coming out? Did you, who did you tell, and how did you do that process?
I first came out as gender fluid to my parents, and they were very supportive, but a little confused. And about a month later, I was having some mental health issues, and I ended up in a ER waiting to be sent to a psych hospital. And I told my dad that I had been thinking about names, and I was really uncomfortable with my birth name. And I had found the name Max, and I wanted to go with that. And he kind of prodded me a bit, and he's like, well, do you think you maybe want to use he, him pronouns? And that was something I had already been thinking about. And I was like, actually, yes. I might as well just dive in. I'm already like in this weird emotional state on the edge. Might as well just deal with this right now.
Well, as a parent, I'm just going to say, go, Dad. Your dad rules.
He had told my therapist about a month prior that he thought that I was a trans guy. And my therapist had said, you cannot tell him that. You have to wait for him to come out.
Well, good. But it's just great that your dad was so tuned in to you and so open and accepting. And that's not the experience that a lot of trans kids have. There's a lot of resistance, right?
Yes. I personally think that my family's immediate acceptance of that was partially because I was already doing so badly mentally. Mm-hmm. And they could see how, they could see looking back how that would be something that would have contributed to my pretty bad mental health, and were very hopeful that helping me with that would help, and it did.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah, and this is a perfect time to bounce it to Andrea and ask you, how did you get involved in the transgender parent community?
When my daughter came out to me, she first came out to me as non-binary. Her gender identity was non-binary when she was 19, and I was very surprised, and I didn't have any friends or people in my community I knew who had trans kids. And I really realized I needed to step up with my parenting to be the best supportive parent for her that I could. So I looked up, I must have Googled trans families and found it online. And when I went to the first meeting, actually Max's mom, Michelle, was there. Who I had met before. I knew her from when our kids were little. And I was immediately so relieved to be with this group of parents who shared some of the same questions that I had and were going through the same learning process. And it gave me so much comfort, but also support and some pushing. I got a little pushing, I feel like, from the group to learn everything that I needed to learn to be the best parent to my daughter that I could. And I think that the support of the other parents in that group moved me along so quickly. What if I'd been on my own trying to find the answers to my question, to understand what gender identity meant and what it meant for her to come out, to be so brave to come out to us. I think it improved all of our lives. I don't know how I would have gotten through that time without it, because I had a lot to learn. I didn't realize how ignorant I was about gender issues before my daughter came out to me, but I realized that I was way behind, and the learning I received in that group helped me parent her enormously.
Yeah, and you know, the ignorance, it's interesting. Max, your generation, we don't, those of us in the rest of our generation, we don't feel like we're that far away. We don't feel like we're ancient, but the difference in understanding of gender between youth and those of us who are in the parent age range is enormous, just enormous.
Well, and I would say it's gotten a lot better even since when I came out about 7 years ago. Maybe it's because of the cultural awareness, but people are less hostile.
And hostility often stems from fear of the unknown. That's sort of what our biology tells us to do when there's something fearful coming at us, to be hostile. So maybe it's just that we're all so much more familiar now, because of what's in the media, what's in our environments, knowing more trans people or just seeing them on television. One of the things that these laws presuppose is that being trans is not fundamental to a human. So Max, I know this is sort of a ridiculous question, but I do feel I need to ask it. Can trans people just not be trans? Can you just decide to say, I'm just going to stick with my female birth name and you know, just be fit in and deny this part of me?
If that was possible, I would not have gone through as much as I have gone through. I have received death threats for being trans before, among other things. And I would not have chosen this, I don't think. I'm happy to be who I am because that's who I am, but you know, if it was a choice, I don't think I would have chosen this.
It seems like an unusual choice for most people. And why don't I bounce it back to you, Andrea? The parents that you get coming in who are just newly found out that their child is trans. What's the range of their levels of acceptance of it?
Most of the parents who I get to talk with are coming to talk to me because they love their children so deeply. And so that love and that support of their child is always there. But in terms of understanding their child's gender identity, accepting it as real, and then affirming it and supporting them, that can take a long time for parents to move along that path. And I think a big reason in my experience is I think parents are afraid. I think parents are afraid because they can't always envision the life for their young person as a trans adult as they go through their life. As we were talking about, it's only very recently that the culture has been somewhat less hostile towards trans people. And I think parents are scared. Will their child have a happy life? Will they have a meaningful life? What will their life look like as a trans person? And I think we're starting to see more models of that in the culture, which can be so reassuring to parents. But I often think it's similar to what it probably was like 40 years ago for parents if their children came out as gay or lesbian, the fear that they felt, the panic, the hoping it's not true, those feelings, because we didn't have models then for what a happy life could look like for gay and lesbian people. And now, of course, most parents I come across wouldn't think twice if their children came out to them around their sexuality. And to this new learning that we as a culture need to do around gender, I think it's the next cultural moment that we're going to encounter. And probably 40 years from now, parents will be much more receptive and calm when their children come out to them. But I think there's a lot of fear. There's confusion, often lack of understanding, and just a lot of questions. Parents have a lot of questions.
Yeah, and Jenny, from the point of view of a physician, what do you see with the parents who are coming in?
Well, I have to say, I feel like being in Santa Cruz, we are exceptionally fortunate. You know, we have a very open community, I feel like, very accepting. You know, we're quite accepting of LGBTQ, you know, people in general. And so I think we're very lucky. And so part of this show is talking about some of the legislation, you know, anti-trans law legislation. And in Santa Cruz, we're not having to deal with that. So I guess part of it is I think we're lucky. And yes, this is a cultural revolution, but we're also seeing that in some places, it's also culturally acceptable to say very hateful things about someone who's trans. So I think it's really very divided in this country, as, you know, politics have been, laws have been. And so we're really seeing our country is very divided. And where we live, we are fortunate. I mean, if I was a trans person or a gay person, I would wholeheartedly want to live in this area and not in certain other areas. You know, I've had patients come from the South, you know, with preacher parents who, you know, are transgender, and they felt unsafe, you know, coming out in that environment. And so they had to get away in order for that to happen. And I've had many college students who come, you know, their freshman year to see me, because now all of a sudden they've been exposed to, you know, what is transgender. It's a conversation that is had, you know, in college life, especially in somewhere like Santa Cruz. And so their eyes are wide open and they feel more accepted and safe coming out and, you know, maybe pursuing transition when before they just didn't have that safe environment or accepting environment. So I think it really depends on where you are. You know, how is it to be a trans person? Is it safe? Is it welcoming? You know, and even in Santa Cruz, you know, I think, and Max could speak to this more, that there are people who have, of course, experienced some discrimination, but it's definitely, I think, frowned upon, and you're definitely going to find allies here that are going to support you and defend you and whatnot. Whereas in other places, you're going to find people who, you know, they gang up on someone and it's not, you might get discriminated against if you are defending someone and being an ally to a trans person. So we're lucky, I guess, is the bottom line, to live where we live and have a medical community, parents, you know, faculty that are so open and welcoming.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. What, and let's talk mostly about the under 18 kids. And I love knowing that kids are coming to UC Santa Cruz and finding a way to access the healthcare they need. But for whatever reason, most of these bills are directly targeting parents and medical personnel who give services of any sort to underage trans kids. And so in order for the listeners to completely understand what is being affected here, let's start by, Jenny, if you could describe what are the different types of care that trans youth will be coming to you in order to get?
So, you know, if I have someone coming to my office to seek care, sometimes it's just to get information, you know, and support. A lot of times in a youth, you know, it's parents coming because their child has expressed, you know, some gender confusion or expressed, you know, that they feel they're another gender. And so sometimes it's just parents coming to me to want more information and kind of discuss the options that are available to them, whether it be now or in the future. So that's part of it, is just gathering information. But if I get someone in my office who clearly identifies as transgender and really wants to transition in some way, and whether it be, you know, non-binary or, you know, they want to completely transition to the opposite sex, you know, we have available to them, you know, various medical options. So in someone who's young, early in puberty, you know, we have puberty blockers. So we can basically kind of put a pause on puberty and give that person and family time to really adjust to their decision and give them time to make a decision about whether or not they truly want to hormonally transition.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of just like a pause button.
Yeah. And the puberty blockers, do they have any major long-term effects? I mean, if you stop taking them, what happens?
If you're using them for, you know, a period of time, 1 to 2 years, for example, you know, there really is very limited, you know, long-term side effects. It really is like putting a pause on puberty. So, you know, if you go off the blockers, then puberty will resume and you go on from there. So it's really just kind of a pause in order to decide if further transition is something that, you know, the child or adolescent wants. So it's helpful to just give, you know, the family and the youth time to just really adjust and figure out if that's something that they really want to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really helpful too, because in someone who's developing, you know, going through puberty, it can be very dysphoric if your body is doing things that you don't want or feel like represents what you believe is your true identity. So pausing some of those changes and, you know, pausing the formation of some of those unwanted, you know, characteristics can really help with, you know, an adolescent's mental health and, mm-hmm. you know, can really be life-saving for some of these kids that go through puberty and are just really struggling and very dysphoric and wondering, why is my body doing this? I it's not developing how I feel like it should be. So putting a pause on it really can be life-saving, and it can give people the time to adjust and figure out what steps they want to take next.
Uh-huh. And then what about hormone therapy and surgery for underage kids? What could you talk a little bit about what sorts of things are done in that case?
Yeah, so, you know, if someone's older, further along in puberty, or they've maybe been on puberty blockers for a while and they decide they're ready to further transition, we do have hormones available. So we call it cross hormones, or hormones, you know, designed to develop characteristics of, you know, your desired gender identity. So, for example, in transgender boys or transgender men, we have testosterone to develop more male characteristics. In transgender women or transgender girls, we have estradiol or estrogen, the female hormone, to develop more female characteristics. We also have testosterone blockers to diminish the effects of testosterone in transgender women. So we have lots of options that really can help, you know, someone transition and develop the gender characteristics that they feel is more appropriate for their body.
Mm-hmm. And so for, you know, what I hear from parents is that the big concern at puberty, there's concerns that are different for each biological sex, and especially for the children who were identified male at birth. Once they get testosterone at puberty, they have changes that can only be changed through surgery and change. So if they, for a trans girl, it's very important that they have the option to pause things so that they don't develop physical characteristics that will be much harder to change in the future. Would you
agree
with that?
Yes, that's absolutely true. You know, by putting a pause on puberty in a trans woman, you're preventing, you know, masculinizing features to, you know, the face, hair growth, you know, an Adam's apple, deepening of the voice, all of those things that are not really able to be reversed or changed with hormones. So by treating someone's gender identity early, you really do prevent some of those more advanced sexual characteristics that can't be reversed with hormones. So it really, by treating, you know, a child or an adolescent early, you can really save them from having a lot of procedures down the road so that they're better able to pass, as we call it, you know, as the, the gender identity that they, you know, are identifying with. So I think if we're treating adolescents before they go through puberty or, you know, right around when they go through puberty, ultimately they're going to need less medical interventions down the road.
Mm-hmm. So Max, can you talk a little bit about your own transition and what you did medically and how also it affected your mental health?
Yep. So I went through my first puberty when I was about 10 years old, which was, you know, pretty young. It kind of, personally, I see that as the beginning of when my mental health started to decline. I'm sure my parents feel similarly. I had some other stuff going on, but that was really the thing that made my mental health start to nosedive. And by the time I was about 13, I was doing about as badly as a teenager can do. This is a little bit dark, but I was pretty much actively suicidal. I was trying to kill myself. I was self-harming a lot. And I had a eating disorder as well. And I ended up in some hospitals, and then I ended up in some residential treatment. That was around when I was 13, came home for a bit, and I came out as trans in an ER. Not the best scenario, but it ended up helping a lot. Very quickly, my parents helped me find chest binders to help flatten my chest. And overall, that was sort of when I started to feel like it was worth continuing to survive. Before that, I did not feel that way. And soon after that, my parents helped me get started on testosterone. I had been seeing a therapist who happened to be a transgender, like a gender therapist, since I was about 8, sort of by coincidence. But
wow, good coincidence.
That being said, he knew me pretty well, and he was very much on board with me transitioning because it was clear that that was something that was going to help me. And it definitely did. I almost immediately, when I started getting results from the testosterone, I started getting what's called gender euphoria, which is essentially the opposite of gender dysphoria. It's just feeling really, like, really positive about being able to be perceived as my gender. And short about a year after that, I was able to get top surgery to get my breasts removed. And I think that was maybe the one most impactful things that my parents have ever done for me. After that, I felt so free and so not continuing to be weighed down by something I had no control over. And really, at that point, from that point on, I was not self-harming frequently. I was not suicidal anymore. I was starting to be able to work on the sort of the issues that come along with having that much pain for so long, instead of just having to have other people keep me alive.
That's so moving to hear that, the struggle, the ability to get past just trying to stay alive. So, you know, we're talking about these laws, and we really haven't talked about the laws very much yet. And part of the reason for that is that I wanted to lay the base for what we're dealing with here, which is children who have needs, mental health needs that cross over into physical needs, parents who are trying to help their children, and medical professionals who have studied this and are not making random spur of the moment decisions, but actually understand the medicine they're practicing. And it seems like the crux of these laws is distrust in the parents and the medical practitioners and the kids to know what these kids need. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, how do we know what to do? And Andrea, I'm going to go back to you because you work with a lot of different parents who come with a lot of different backgrounds, different experiences. Their kids are everything from very young kids to adults. And what's the process that parents go through to make sure that they're making the right decision for their kids?
I think the answer to that depends a lot on the age of the child. I know parents whose children were very clear on their gender identity at the age of 2 or 3. A lot of young children know what their gender is, even at a very, very young age, and not all young children have the language to talk about it. But parents in that situation, they tend to have more time to think, to explore, to talk to professionals. Hopefully they're able to access good support. And at that age, the only transition that happens at that age is maybe a new name, maybe new pronouns, maybe new haircut. But parents whose children are so clear of their gender identity at that age get to take their time and really think about it and work with their child and explore. And those children may then be coming, as they approach puberty, to a doctor to talk about pausing that puberty. Because usually parents, you know, they're cautious and they want to make sure that they're making the absolute best right choice for their child. And as Jenny was talking about, the puberty blockers buy them another year or two to really explore and be sure. And then if puberty blockers, you know, when it's time to make a decision whether to continue with transitioning or not, that's, you know, when hormones get introduced, and that's a big decision that families have to make. But there's a lot of other young people who come out to their parents right around puberty is a very common time. As Max described so powerfully, you know, the changes that happen in puberty can be a crisis for a transgender young person, because a pre-puberty child, a boy isn't that different from a girl, and they can play, they can wear with other clothes, but when those secondary sexual characteristics start to show up, it can be a true mental health crisis. And at that point, there's not always a lot of time. As Max described, it can precipitate suicidality and self-harm. And when those situations happen, those young people just need care. there's not time for the parents to go through their own personal internal process of learning, growing, accepting their child's gender. That child just needs professional medical help. And what they're needing is gender care, medical gender care, ideally to pause those changes that are happening because of puberty that started. And perhaps using cross hormones at that point to transition their gender. But when your young person is in a life or death situation, keeping that young person alive through whatever means necessary becomes the parent's number one priority. And if the child's lucky and they have a supportive parent, that often addressing their gender dysphoria can be a huge, huge step. Again, I mean, Max, I feel like you gave such a powerful description of how that actually happened in your own life. But living in a body that you feel completely alienated from, that's changing in ways that feel completely wrong to you, can cause just intense internal suffering that those of us who haven't lived through that probably cannot understand.
Yeah, that's true. And it is so hard for most of us to understand this, because most people, even people who realize themselves at some point to be lesbian or gay, do not feel that they're in the wrong body, that they feel they're expressing their sexuality. And so this is a completely different thing for most people to wrap their heads around. So Jenny, could you explain from your point of view, when parents come in with, let's say that they come in with a child in crisis, or maybe perhaps on the edge of it, do you ever feel like, oh, these are people who haven't really thought this through, or do they seem like they're really understanding the long-term consequences?
I think in most cases, when, you know, say an adolescent or a younger child comes to my office, the child or the patient really has thought about this for a while. And it comes into my office because they've recently, you know, come out to their parents. So usually for the child or adolescent, they've been struggling with this decision and gender identity, you know, for possibly years. And now maybe puberty is really highlighting how dysphoric it is and how more urgent it is. So I don't tend to see, you know, I tend to see these kids when they have finally, you know, come out to a parent, and then it's, you know, more of a crisis. And so the parents tend to have a lot of questions, they're really still working through just even accepting and understanding. Whereas, you know, the child really has been thinking about this for, you know, quite a while. So it's not new to them. A lot of the teens have come in and they have done all the research. They know about all of the medicines. You know, they don't have any questions. It's the parents who come in and have, you know, lots of worries and questions. And I get parents all the time, you know, worried, well, if my child goes on hormones, you know, is their mental health going to get horrible? And, you know, they're really worried about that. And, you know, my answer is always, you know, probably the opposite. You know, most of the kids who come into my office, especially teens or later, are really struggling with anxiety, depression, suicidality. They're in crisis. And Max, you know, spoke to that perfectly. We see that all the time. And so parents are very concerned that some of this anxiety and depression is going to get worse because we're going to put them on hormones. But the reality is when, you know, a teen is able to, you know, start transitioning and be accepted as their, you know, what they consider their true identity, their entire, you know, outlook improves. You know, the anxiety gets better, their depression gets better. That doesn't mean they don't need support and, you know, could benefit from therapy and groups and whatnot. That's all wonderful and can help with that transition. But inherently, that the depression and anxiety almost always gets better. And so parents, you know, have a fear that that's not going to be the case. But, you know, almost universally, mental health really does improve when we treat, you know, gender dysphoria and help a young person transition.
Would you agree with that, Max?
Yes, definitely. I also would want to say there is kind of a odd stigma around hormones just in general. I think that the word hormonal is often applied to people who are acting a little bit, quote unquote, crazy.
Oh, yes, definitely. Good point.
In a misogynistic way, but it also ends up bringing back this kind of implication that having more hormones will make you crazier or something. And I do know I've heard a lot of people say that there's a misconception that testosterone will naturally make people angrier. And that's not true at all. I actually found myself get way, way calmer after being on testosterone because I was happier.
There's so much misunderstanding about testosterone from, I think, stemming from the popular understanding of that, of the testosterone rage case, which was long before you were born, but I really remember it, that a weightlifter, a bodybuilder freaked out and killed someone, and they blamed it on the fact that he was taking testosterone. And so there's this deep, like you said, social feeling that hormones are equivalent to craziness.
Well, and I think it does go back to this, you know, misogyny, patriarchy thing for trans guys. Testosterone very much in most people's minds comes up as thinking like, oh, like manly man, like guns and hurting people and I don't know, like weird things like that. And then when it comes to trans women, it's often seen like, oh, estrogen women, like I the whole misogyny surrounding like hormones for women and how people think women act when they are having hormone times. I don't know how to really put that. I was going to say imbalance.
PMS.
That doesn't make sense. And it's just this whole cultural misconception that's really based in misogyny and patriarchy issues.
Yeah. And so, you know, when we look at these laws and we look where they are being enacted, and I read that long list at the beginning of the program, you know, we see this correlation, and it's a correlation of politics on the one hand, but we don't even really have to talk about politics because we can just talk about culture. And that, you know, as we've discussed, here we are in Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz has its problems. It's not a place where every trans person is going to live, you know, la la happiness and rainbows and everybody's going to give me candy. But it's not a place where we have strong support or any support at all for these restrictive laws. The laws are coming up in places, and I thought it was interesting that you mentioned misogyny. And, you know, culturally, where do you think that these laws stem from, Max? Is sort of culturally?
Well, so I'm going to go into a bit of an anecdote here. I lived briefly in rural New Mexico with an ex-partner of mine. And for a long time, I spoke with his mother, who was very, very religious and very traditionally minded, about me being trans. And I was trying to just sort of talk it out with her. I was very calm and measured the whole time and just sort of going back and forth and bringing up points. But at some point, I got to a point where she said something about how she did not believe that men and women were created equal. And I realized in that moment, there was no way I was going to be able to logically bring her around to understanding. She had already gotten to the point of respecting me just because I was important to her child, but she was never going to understand me because we had this fundamental difference in our beliefs about gender. And I think that things like that and this kind of very simplified ideas of what is natural end up going into this. I mean, when you look at it, trans people have existed for forever. The information is there if you look for it. Intersex people have existed for forever. There is not like two cut and dry sexes. And I think that some people just believe so, so strongly that there is, and that trans people are wrong or something, that it ends up becoming this problem where they're not willing to concede that we should be able to exist happily.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up this the gender binary, and I want to point out the statistic that to me is, I think, the one that really hits home to people, which is intersex people who are biologically, physically neither 100% male nor 100% female are as common as redheads. So if you know someone with natural red hair, that's how likely you are to know an intersex person, but they don't talk about it because, of course, it's not like, you know, we get together for drinks and say, hey, let me tell you about my vagina.
Well, so, and unfortunately, they may not even know themselves.
Yeah, many times they don't.
The amount of information that's withheld and the amount of surgeries that are performed unconsensually mm-hmm. on babies.
Yeah, and I can highly recommend to anyone who's interested in this, there's a wonderful, very homemade-y documentary that an intersex person made of themselves and their friends called Intersection. I think it's called Intersection. If you look on YouTube for intersex documentary, you'll find it. And I just thought it was just so beautiful because they were really just speaking who they were to the camera. And yeah, a lot of people don't know. And we're not going to be able to get into that whole other can of worms, which is the number of these laws that are restricting especially trans girls' participation in sports. But I have read a number of articles about young up-and-coming people at high levels in sports who find out that they're intersex in some way or another. One of the top runners in the world is a woman whose natural levels of testosterone are nearly in the typical range for men. That's just her body. She's not doing anything. So we are not a binary, that's for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the effects of the laws. What it will do, and I want to start with you, Andrea. You know, how it's going to affect the parents who are seeking care. And let's look at some place like Arkansas, where it has been, it wasn't signed into law. That was one of the more surprising situations. It was passed into law because the governor refused to sign it and they overrode the veto. And I can't imagine what it takes for someone in his position to have done that. But those parents now in a place like Arkansas where they've made it illegal for a parent to seek trans medical care for their child, how is that going to affect the parents and the family?
Well, I know that in Arkansas, a doctor at one of the primary clinics, gender clinics there, reported that within the 2 weeks after that law was passed, four of her patients, her adolescent patients, attempted suicide.
Oh my goodness.
So I think right there, that's what's going to happen to those families. For young people, for people of any age, but we're talking about young people. To have the access to their medically necessary gender-affirming care taken away, this is taking away care for young people who are already receiving hormones, is going to be a crisis. I can't really imagine. If I lived in Arkansas right now, I would be picking up and leaving the state because that would be a crisis of such huge proportion for a young person. And for children who maybe have been exploring puberty blockers as they're approaching puberty and thinking about this process, to have all those options taken away from them has got to take away so much hope. And also the message that these adults who are making laws, who should be protecting them, creating safety for young people, caring for the well-being of young people, don't even respect or believe in the existence of these trans children. How already we live in a culture that has so many messages belittling trans people, ridiculing trans people. And to have that disbelief and disrespect come from the highest levels of their government, to say that they have no right to live in their true gender, I think the mental health outcomes are going to be horrific. And probably a lot of those parents are going to have to pick up their lives and move to a state where their children can be safe. It's beyond my imagination how these people in the legislatures can justify making decisions which will have such a profound and devastating impact on the lives of young people, without even consulting them, knowing them, and to think that they know better than the doctors, the therapists, the parents who are actually caring for these young people and seeing their realities. But it's beyond devastating.
Yeah, I agree. And Jenny, from the perspective of a medical doctor, when the government steps in like this, it's not very typical, is it? I mean, other than abortion and this, there really aren't that many places where the government tells you what you can and can't do as a doctor, right?
It's true. I mean, abortion is the classic example that, has been regulated forever. And it's this trans issues are, kind of the next civil right that we're working with. I'm hoping that in 40 years we're going to look back on this period and, think we were crazy and, can't even believe that some of these things were happening, but here we are, we're having to deal with it. And hopefully, of course, things will move to a higher level and the Supreme Court will legislate that all of these laws are, illegal and we shouldn't be passing them. But in the meantime, it's going to be tragic. The mental health implications, right now of what's happening are huge. The kids that are dealing with this now don't have years to wait out the legislation. So, I agree it's going to have devastating, mental health effects. And parents who can just pick up and leave, fabulous for that family that they have those means. But what, it's also going to create huge health disparities of families who don't have those, financial means to seek out care elsewhere or move or, move to a different state, get new jobs or pay for their care, outside of insurance, by going elsewhere. So it's creating a lot of disparities in that way as well. So there's implications on many levels that are devastating.
Yeah, and so, I guess you sort of looked to the future a little bit and said, hopefully, you know, that it'll get worked out. And I just wonder which direction our country goes when our country is going in such wildly different directions that here we are in Santa Cruz. And I know I was speaking to a parent of an online student who lived in a place where they could not get any trans mental health care at all. And I said, well, okay, this is sort of ironic, but luckily we're in the middle of a pandemic. Would you like me to refer you to somebody in Santa Cruz? Because they're all giving online therapy now anyway. So it was sort of one of those weird positive things that comes from the pandemic. But coming from my point of view, thinking, wow, to live in a place where there isn't a single therapist that you would trust your transgender child with because you can't know if they're going to do more harm than good because of their fundamental beliefs about gender and sexuality. And that must be very difficult. So where do we go from here when, you know, to get back to the listeners, they're listening to this conversation and I hope that they are understanding more what's at stake. When we move forward from here, what do we do? The families in these states clearly need support. The kids need support. Max, can you speak a little bit about where you hope that our country will move to after getting through this terrible period of these laws?
Well, I would just hope that we move towards a world where it's possible for people to get the care they need without having to go to lengths that are unreasonable. I mean, I would not be here today without the care that I received as a teen. And now I'm able to work and do school and be a functioning member of society. And I want that for every trans teen that needs that. I want us to have the same chance that every other teen gets to be able to grow up and be happy and be healthy and whole.
I think that's a perfect expression of it. How about you, Andrea? What might you advise to parents who are in the middle of this? What do you hope they can look forward to?
Well, for the parents, I do hope that they can look at their children first and foremost and see like the beautiful, creative, wonderful, brave children that they have. The trans young people I know are some of the most courageous, wholehearted, self-aware young people I have met. And that's where I have my hope. Because as I see these young people growing up and taking their places in our culture, hopefully taking their places in government and as leaders, I think our culture is going to change in a beautiful, positive way. But in the meantime, I think we parents of all adults, but really I'm calling on all parents, whether your children are gender diverse or not, that we need to protect our children. That's our number one job in this, as humans and as adults, is to care for the young people, to bring them up safely, respecting them for who they are as individuals in all of their beautiful diversity. And I think I want to ask the whole community to be in for this fight, to take care of our children. They're worth it.
I think that is just a really beautiful place to end. I want to tell listeners that the podcast page of this recording, which will be on ksqd.org. You can just search for my name or transgender laws. We'll have information and links, and we'll have the full-length recording if you are not listening to it from that page, if you're listening live. And thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Andrea, Max, and Jenny, for all of your thoughts and wisdom.
Thank you.
Thank you, Suki.